this episode of Ice Pilots NWT. The water bomber pilots prepare for the worst over the Atlantic. The groom-to-be prepares for the big day. And engineers prepare an Electra for its maiden mission.
Why didn't we check all this sucking stuff before we went out of the hangar?
Overpaid prima donnas.
As February turns to March, things are heating up at Buffalo Airways. The CL-215 water bombers made it across the frozen Canadian landscape en route to Turkey in one piece. They tested their auxiliary fuel supply on the way to Winnipeg, got kicked out of the hangar in Montreal in the middle of the night, and raised a winter storm to St. John's, Newfoundland.
We played it exactly perfect.
Holy smokes, did we ever, man. That's almost a hurricane out there.
Well, that must be that offshore survival.
Now, Buffalo chief pilot Arnie Schrader, his co-pilot Justin Simley, and two hired guns George Fury and Dave Poole are taking part in a survival training course in case they have to ditch in the ocean.
We all know that North Atlantic's not a very friendly environment, especially in the winter.
It's a 2,200-kilometer crossing over deadly cold waters in short-haul water bombers meant to fly in the summer.
Nobody traditionally crosses the North Atlantic with these types of airplanes that time of year.
It's a dangerous mission. Today's training could save their lives.
You'd be a f***ing idiot to not know what could happen before you take that trip.
It's like a big problem. It's called a full body job.
That son of a bitch trying to get those things on. They're so tight, eh? That they cut off your circulation. But I guess you keep the water out of, you know, the suit, so.
If they have to ditch into the frigid ocean, these high-tech survival suits could keep them alive for up to 24 hours.
The hood was the worst. Once you put the hood on, chin strap kind of goes over. That's bordering on painful.
So you had to make sure your sleeves were watertight. You had to make sure that it went up around your chin and around your neck and was totally waterproof.
Now I'm ready to rock. You got a body line right here on your suit?
Yeah.
You choke it on your buddy's arm here, right? Kind of thing. I'll keep you together.
Arnie, Justin, and the rest of the crew must wear these bulky suits for the entire 9.5-hour trip across the ocean. They'll keep the survival suits dry for now and train in neoprene wetsuits.
You're placing my smokes?
In the pool.
No, we're not going to the moon. We're just going swimming.
The mood is light.
Because once the view is...
But the underlying message isn't.
We teach people stuff that we hope they never had to use.
We were taught how to maneuver, how to do certain positions, how to do the buddy system, how to connect with a number of people.
Okay, we're ready to rock. Okay, I want you to swim on to the side of the pool.
Two arms! Then it's into the simulator for a crash landing.
You want to let your crew know we're going to hit the drink. We're going to hit the water. So ditching, ditching, ditching. Prepare to ditch.
Ditching, ditching. Brace for impact, boys. We're going down about a minute before we hit the water.
You've got to make sure your line, which is tethered to the aircraft, is cut.
We need a knife, too, eh?
Because if the airplane you're in sinks and takes the raft with it, it's going to be completely useless.
Yeah.
Get a spray view of that hose.
How do you like the Atlantic?
That's a good point.
I just give him an incentive to put up the canopy.
Time is critical when you're in cold water. It made us get the canopy up on the raft a lot quicker. It was really good, actually. I'm glad we did it.
Learning how to survive ditching into the ocean is crucial.
This is going to really suck in your life.
You sure wouldn't want to be out there doing that stuff in 40-foot swells, that's for sure.
Back at the hangar, the engineers on the crew, led by Corey Dodd, are doing maintenance on the two water bombers.
Their number one engine on TXB had a massive oil leak because they needed a cylinder change. And our compass system was f***ed.
They need the engines and the compasses to be working right before they attempt the North Atlantic crossing.
We can test it right on the ground. So it's doing the same problem it was doing in the air, it's doing it on the ground, so it'll be easy to fix.
You can't blast off for 1,400 miles with a compass system and an engine that's going to fail, right?
So the engineers work on getting the planes ready and pray they won't need the emergency training they missed out on. Buffalo Joe sold the water bombers to Turkey for $7 million, a huge boon to Buffalo during a recession year. And Joe has two idle Lockheed Electras that he'd like to see earning their keep, too. Powerful and fast, the turboprop Electra is the most advanced airplane in the fleet.
People say, you know, you've been in piston pounders all your life and you've never had a turboprop or you don't know anything about turbines. That's sort of a myth that's around Buffalo, but we have had probably more experience with the turbine engine than a lot of people.
Joe bought this pair of 1959 Electras for millions of dollars a few years back.
Once we get north of the Arctic coast, we're running out of fuel. If fuel wasn't like it was a few years ago, ongoing supply of avgas for the piston pounding airplanes, no, there'd be no Electra here.
But Joe has only used one of his Electras a few times. And the second Electra has sat completely idle. Now, there's a fuel haul contract at Baker Lake and none of it, and Joe wants to press an Electra into service.
Every aircraft that flies the north has a capacity to haul fuel.
The man Joe has put in charge of getting the Electra flight ready is engineer Chuck Adams.
Chuck's worked on all these different aircrafts, and he understands Electra very, very well.
Joe says I'm in charge of the Electra program, but he never told me what the program was. I still don't know what program is. All I know is I'm in charge.
Chuck's task is to prep the Electra that's been sitting idle for the Baker Lake fuel haul.
How much fuel can we carry?
Well, I haven't got that, but I'm trying to make, you know, try to get the loads in there without breaking the floor.
Ray Weber is one of the Electra captains, and it's the pilot's job to calculate the plane's load.
The airplane's got to be within the bounds of weight and balance, because if it's out of its weight and balance envelope, it could be uncontrollable in some flight regime.
Okay, so how much can we carry? I need that number. I need that freaking magic number to take that.
The math is complicated, but the principle is simple.
You want to be able to lift that nose when it's supposed to lift and kind of lift the way it's supposed to lift. You want to go up there and turn upside down.
Chuck needs Ray's weight calculations to begin prepping the plane.
Can't deal with test pilots.
The Electra must deliver fuel to Baker Lake in less than a week, and that puts Chuck on a tight schedule.
Did everybody quit? Did you see that blonde kid? What's his name?
Rob Despins has been apprenticing with Chuck for several months, but Chuck has yet to learn his name. So, he improvises.
Where's Knob?
I haven't seen him for a while.
There's that little dog. Don't you be making a career of this. Every time I gotta look for something, I gotta find you.
Before installing the fuel tanks in the Electra, all the extra parts that have been stripped out of the cargo hold need to be tracked and weighed.
That ball mask gotta be weighed?
Okay.
That shit's all gonna be weight. All this has to be weight. All this here, this has to be weight. I don't know what this crap is. This is gonna be weight too.
I think we would have better success of building a spaceship and going to Mars.
Let's do it.
Shut up.
Meanwhile, in Newfoundland, Justin, Arnie, and the crew are doing some calculating themselves.
This is our weather package. It's got all our North Atlantic charts, all our Canadian charts.
The 2,200-kilometer flight to the Azores Islands on the other side of the Atlantic should take about 9.5 hours.
Our departure time was slated for about 5 in the morning so we could make the Azores before dark.
So we're out of it.
Well,
not too many miles.
Pretty well.
But the pilots need three elements to come together before they can take off on this dangerous flight. Relatively clear skies, temperatures above the freezing point, and a tailwind.
The winds are right.
From their hotel room in St. John's, they check in with the region's weather office on the phone.
We have no de-icing equipment.
Oh, okay, so that's your big concern here, is no de-icing in the aircraft.
Correct,
okay.
Yeah.
Most commercial aircraft have electric de-icing capability in the wings. Smaller planes have de-icing boots, a rubber membrane that covers the leading edge of the wings and expands to crack the ice that forms on them. The CL-215 water bombers just aren't equipped to fly in winter. If they ice up, they may plunge into the ocean.
Well, everybody's nervous, I think, about that North Atlantic and airplanes that are not designed to cross oceans, eh?
They need a detailed weather forecast and need to pray it's right.
For the majority of that trip, you're going to be in the clear conditions. 21 to 06, still forecasting, cross temperature grade up to 9,000 feet. That deck of cloud that you see there, alright, you go out, you stay below 9, there you go, no icing.
Clear conditions and temperatures above freezing, but the wind has to be just right.
You know, you're looking at 60 west. And 50 north.
Looks like there are headwinds to fight, which would suck up precious fuel.
There's no way we do 130 knots of wind. That's going to bring it up to 10 hours.
And then once we hit 40 degrees west, which isn't quite halfway, we're looking at 10 knots on the nose.
We can't go in that.
Yeah.
Run out of fuel.
Yeah. Can't just pull into the nearest gas station.
This is where the wind changes on us and goes to a headwind.
We're just going to have to wait for a tailwind.
The water bombers are expected to arrive in Turkey in a matter of days. But if the weather over the North Atlantic doesn't change, that deadline will not be met. Still to come, a catastrophe off the coast of Newfoundland.
The mayday call came just minutes after the pilot attempted a return to their St. John's base.
All the weight calculations are done. At least that's what engineer Chuck Adams believes.
Colin.
Backing up just a hair.
Now he's installing three massive tanks in the Electra to haul fuel to Baker Lake.
Put them in, just see how they fit and get everything all arranged for when we do this fuel haul. We stay in the airplane, we haul the fuel in these tanks.
While Buffalo's vintage DC-3s, DC-4s, and C-46s are 65 years old, the Electra is a mere 50. Early in November 1957, the first Electra emerged from the production line. Each one of its Allison prop jet engines packs 3,750 horsepower.
This engine's at 100% power all the time.
They are jet engines. They just have propellers hooked on the front of them, so there's really no difference between flying the Electra and a jet.
In fact, the Electra, with its four turboprop engines, was the stepping stone between the propeller era and the jet age. It made a big splash when it was unveiled. Several U.S. airlines ordered the planes, but then things started going very wrong.
They've been a controversial airplane since the day they came out. The outboard engines, they didn't have enough structure in them, and if they got bad weather, they'd start doodling and whirling. It was going like this, oscillating, whole engine, and they'd rip the wing off.
There were some tragic crashes, and the Electra was recalled. By the time the engine mount problem was fixed, jet airliners had taken over. The Electra became outdated before it ever really took off, and production was stopped. Only a few of the planes remain in service today.
They fly well, they're good in this area, and it's versatile. Versatility is most important.
And with avgas, the fuel used for Buffalo's piston-driven planes, getting scarce, the Electra, powered by jet fuel, will keep Buffalo flying.
We can go into northern Nunavut or into the Arctic with a little less work. The airplane can refuel at most of the bases.
But Joe has been a reluctant convert.
Why is it so expensive? Because it's a very expensive airplane to maintain. Every hour, 5,000 pounds of fuel's gone on those exhaust pipes.
Joe's been resistant, basically, because he has a love for piston engine aircraft.
Joe may love his older planes, but he's got to start using the Electris.
You get a big, expensive airplane, and it's got to work. It can't be sitting on the ground.
There. Push.
Okay.
There's a lot of fuel hauling goes on the north. And we want to get on the market.
The three fuel tanks are installed in the Electra. Now Chuck has to get both pilots to approve the rigging.
My biggest concern is not having them drift back on takeoff or anything. It's for deceleration. We gotta make sure that they don't move forward.
Brian's focus is on tying the tanks down securely, but Ray is still preoccupied with weight.
A 4x4x16, if I remember rightly, was 48 pounds. So you got 490 pounds of tank, virtually 100 pounds of 4x4 underneath it, and another 5 or 10 pounds for straps.
Ray still doesn't have it all figured out, so the Electra pilots put their heads together to crunch the numbers.
That's a revamp of the numbers.
Frustrated that the weight issue hasn't been resolved yet, Chuck takes a hike.
I'm out of here, brother. Quit.
Across town, Mikey McBrien is on a mission, and it's brought him to a place he rarely visits.
Yeah, I don't like grocery shopping too much.
Was it $16? I'll see if I can make it cheaper than that. We'll see.
Mikey has never baked anything, but it's Joe's 65th birthday, and Mikey wants to do something special for his father.
Usually I forget the old man's birthday, so this year I'm going to go ahead and try to make him a cake. I got to figure out what a cake is. I think this might be...
Mikey's job at Buffalo requires a lot of problem-solving under pressure.
We're in the crackers aisle, yes, and meat.
But this is different.
This is kind of cake stuff. I must be pretty close. 3 liter? The inches. I'm trying to cook in that. There's a lot of different types of pans out there. I thought like a cake pan, it would say cake pan on it. There's stuff that looked like donuts. There's corn oil, sunflower oil, canola oil, and vegetable oil. You know what vegetable oil is? Try to buy it. Sprinkles. Look at this green icing. This is like one-stop shopping right here. Holy smokes. 65. Really, I thought I could make a cake for under $15.
A $65 cake for Joe's 65th birthday. But Mikey still has to make it. Across the country in St. John's, Newfoundland, a string of bad weather has kept the water bomber crews on standby.
Freezing rain.
Didn't think it'd be this long.
Stop counting the days. It's crazy.
I'm thinking of buying property.
Going stir crazy watching weather forecasts on TV in the hotel room.
How are you guys?
Arnie and some of the boys decide to take in the sights.
First time in Newfoundland? No?
Not for me.
Yeah. All right. You know, it's true. Newfoundlanders are easy to confuse. So if you say two answers together, it's going to screw me up. The Stone City, North America.
One passenger knows all about this part of the country. George Fury is from Newfoundland.
You got a newbie right back here.
Yeah. Their girl's trying to bullshit you, isn't it? Jeez.
First stop, Signal Hill. An historical site dating back to the early 1800s. The century-old Cabot Tower here served as a beacon for distressed ships caught in bad weather.
Where are you headed to?
The Azores first.
We're crossing a body of water that's very extensive, and we have no alternates. When we're halfway across, there's no going back, and no turning around, and no place to go left or right.
We're going to head into Cape Fear. Cape Fear is the most easterly point in North America.
Over the years, hundreds of ships and propeller aircraft have been swallowed off this coast. The view of this vast gray ocean brings home the reality of the flight ahead.
When you see those 30-foot waves, you think about it, because in my opinion, it's very difficult to survive if you went down the North Atlantic. Almost impossible.
I never took that survival course.
Coming up, the Electra finally takes a test flight. But Chuck isn't happy.
7 minute test flight. Look, we didn't even get the flaps on.
A Buffalo DC-3 is about to make a run up the Mackenzie Valley. But for Captain A.J. DeCoste, this flight is not just about cargo. It's his last flight before getting married. And cargo manager Kelly Jurasovic's not letting him forget it.
Last flight as a single man. I best hug you. Have a good trip, buddy.
AJ and co-pilot Gord Cooling are delivering food and supplies to the remote settlement of Delaunay. No matter how many times he's flown this route, flying never gets old for AJ.
And I'm really excited to go into work. You get to go and jump in this airplane that you love, and it sounds awesome. I'm like kind of a motorhead anyhow. If I weren't flying, I'd be riding my snowmobile or riding my motorcycle or doing something like that. So, yeah, it's really exciting.
Fortunately, AJ's fiance Candace fully supports his motorhead ways.
I met AJ in Winnipeg at the bar. I guess picked him up.
I was a pilot before I ever met her, so she knows all my stories and she knows, you know, what it is I do.
When you are dating somebody from Buffalo, you definitely are looking at marrying into the company because it is a lifestyle. And
most of the company will be coming to the wedding. The dress code, more down parka than black tie. The couple is getting married at the Snow King's Ice Castle, a Yellowknife winter landmark. But first, AJ has nearly 6,000 pounds of freight to unload at Delaunay.
I'm getting married on this weekend, so I think it's going to be a long marriage. She said it would be my last flight as a single man. I hope she's right.
AJ only has a few days to get ready for that walk down the icy aisle.
All my family's coming up here, and some of my close friends. It should be a pretty good time.
And the wedding's not the only big change coming up for AJ.
I think Candace is afraid to tell everybody, but she's 5 or 6 weeks pregnant, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Holy shit, dude.
Yeah. Thanks, Dad.
Congratulations.
Big changes, eh?
Oh, my God.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Candace is pregnant with her first baby, so we're not sure if it's a boy or a girl yet, but things are changing pretty quickly, I guess.
AJ's upcoming nuptials aren't the only big event on the Buffalo calendar.
But also got sprinkles, too.
There's also Joe's 65th birthday.
There's a picture of this pan in that thing.
Mikey is baking a cake for the occasion with his girlfriend, Gail.
Mikey always does something different every year for somebody's birthday. You never know what is going to happen.
She kept her distance and tried to help me learn the lesson of cake making. Now how do I go to the third cup? Does it tell me?
Yes, it's not rocket science. I mean, it's not a hard thing to make a cake from a box.
I've been going out with Gail for like a year and a half. We're both taking business administration at Red Deer College, and we did 4 projects, and 3 of them got top of the class.
He added his own uniqueness to it because he bought a marble cake and got some green food coloring and made the white part of the marble green.
Green. The color of Buffalo air.
Now, this is the frickin' ticket.
Well, I hope it's edible when you're done.
That's very unattractive.
Never a dull moment with Mikey around.
I wanted to separate all the green ones out here. Well, this is not practical. I think the cake looks amazing, and I'm really proud of myself. I don't get to say that much.
Mikey knows that Joe is pragmatic above all else, so this $65 cake better be worth it.
I don't want people to think it's a $14 cake. That's a $65 cake.
The question is, will Joe care more about his son's gesture or the $65 it costs to make a cake from a box?
We're not a family that goes around and tells how much we love each other because, I don't know, it's just not how we are. I'd be scared if you ever said that to me. I'd be like, are you dying or something?
They don't openly show affection with each other, but it's the things they do for each other that show their affection for one another.
I put happy birthday, this cake cost $65. But I quite say that this freaking thing has come out pretty awesome.
In the Buffalo hangar, Chuck Adams gets a hand with an overhauled electropropeller from mechanic Juan Tesher and Rod McBrien.
Is that going to line up there, Chuck?
Yeah, that's good.
Having two Electras ready to fly will change the way Buffalo does business.
Now we're going to be capable of hauling a little bit more fuel more often over longer distances.
But nothing on the Electra comes cheap.
These props are worth about $75,000 just for the overhaul.
Once the propeller is installed, the Electra should be ready for a test flight.
This prop regulator is what controls the blade angle. That's why they call it a regulator. It regulates. It's like an alternator. Alternates, carburetor, carburetes. Generator generates. Come on, boys.
While Chuck and the mechanics get things ready in the hangar.
Right there?
Yeah.
A meeting has been called to sort out the pilot's calculations.
So how many times does 11,000 go into a million?
A whole bunch. Before we go talk to Joe, we should sharpen our pencil a little bit here and redo those numbers with the lighter weight.
How's it going, partner?
Oh, good, good.
Top notch.
The Buffalo Brass, Joe and accountant Dave Forbes, go over Brian's figures. Probably.
If these numbers are right, that's what they are, and we can't argue with that.
But also, Joe, you got to remember that that damn strip is only 3,800 feet long.
Oh, they're just a disagreement on the weights we're going to haul in on this fuel haul. I think they're trying to get it together now.
We don't have a whole lot to offer those numbers.
Nope. We got to be careful about that. We're not quoting outside our limits.
No, and that's why.
That's where it gets embarrassing.
I may have made an error in my landing calculations, and he may have made error. But between the two of us, he went one way, I went the other.
One's got this kind of weight, the other's got that kind of weight.
What we're trying to do is reconcile what the differences are.
I did my quote on 4,200-foot runways.
Yeah, fine.
And it turns out that the runways are much shorter than that.
Okay,
so that's
does that account for the whole difference?
And I kind of suspected that it was somebody off the cuff said, what can we carry? And he just worked it backwards from our max landing weight without realizing that the runway may be a limiting factor.
I would have come up with very similar numbers of what Ray came up with if I would have had the runway lengths.
Pilots, well, I'm beginning to wonder. I used to have a little respect for him, but I'm starting to lose respect.
It's Buffalo Joe's 65th birthday, so Mikey has baked him a cake.
Well, I spent $65 making this cake. I can prove it. Look at this. 65th birthday, there you go. I'll be submitting that in for Mr. Forbes.
Yeah, well, it should have been $65 between the layers in hard cash for me. One for every year I put up with them.
Well, how come not 65 candles on it? I can blow 65.
I ran out of money.
Get a knife. Well, cut her up, see what you made for $65.
Did you put money in it? Is it like a money cake?
No, look. Said he paid $65. I think he used bad money.
It's freaking marble. You can't just go to the store and buy marble cake.
Anyway, I got to blow this out, eh?
Yeah,
blow
it.
Look at that. Good luck. I'm making another year. I didn't blow one.
He played along. He cut it up, gave people pieces.
Go around the circle.
Hey, you wait till everybody gets your cake. You don't start first. Where are your manners?
He knows when people work hard for something, and when it comes from the heart, you can recognize that.
I'll save that for one of the crew. Thanks, guys.
Really good. Thanks, Mike.
I was quite proud of him.
I do everything just to see that smirk on his face. He gets that smile on his face. It's pretty good. This is the best cake I ever had. If you need any cake making, you can go look farther than here.
It's takeoff time for Chuck and the Electra. Today, all his hard work will be put to the test.
How are things looking in here, Chuck?
Top notch.
Well, we just want to make sure all of our navigation equipment works, all of our radios work, and that the engines and the rest of the aircraft performs the way it should.
Both electric captains, Brian Harrison and Ray Weber, will be flying the test flight.
All righty, let's get out here, boys. Oh, you better be.
Chuck and two other engineers will be riding in the back seat. But immediately, there's a problem.
Can you hear me?
I can't hear you.
The intercom system isn't working right. They can't hear each other.
Hello, hello, hello. Why didn't we check all this stuff before we went out of the hangar?
It was working before.
Well, why don't we just go with what we got?
Not an ideal situation, but the pilots agree to proceed with the test flight. Decide to head back to the airport.
Flight slow. Flight slow.
How long was that damn test flight? 7 minutes. 7-minute test flight. We didn't even get the flaps.
There's all kinds of little things that either won't work or won't work the way they're designed to.
Ray and Brian aren't ready to give it the thumbs up. They want the little things fixed, and then they want another test flight.
We're not going to get to the moon like this. This is f***ing horseshit.
It's always the same, you know? You'll get an engineer, he'll say, well, what do you need to do that for?
Overpaid f***ing prima donnas.
Chuck's a great engineer, but he's not a pilot, you know? And you see things differently from the seat from back seats.
I'm tired of dealing with bullshit. They're telling Joel that we need another test flight. And Joel's waiting for my answer. My answer was, why do you want another test flight?
I don't know where Chuck's coming from, but I wanted to do another flight on the airplane after we did the initial test.
What, are we going to test fly the f***ing thing to China? How many times are we going to test fly a f***ing airplane?
You know, pilots are just like a priest. They're right there at the same level. Never been there, never done it. Let's sure preach a lot about it.
No, they're not getting another test flight.
I got vetoed. Chuck said it wasn't necessary to do another flight, so Joe agreed with Chuck. So,
a few minor bugs still to iron out, but this Electra is deemed ready to haul fuel to Baker Lake.
Guys like me and Joe, we don't like anybody, eh? So we're just going to be around to make everybody friggin' miserable. And the more miserable I can make them, the better I feel.
That's where I'm going to leave that, boys. Chuck's going to have gone.
Meanwhile, Mikey's busy with a project of his own. He's setting up a GPS monitoring system to track the water bombers via satellite.
How in the hell is this supposed to go on?
If that falls, man, that won't fall. We'll follow both airplanes. And for any reason, if there's something wrong with him, we'll know right away. All right, hopefully she turns on. It works.
The system is ready. Now all they need is the weather to cooperate.
The forecast is to get better for our arrival time. It's weather going up.
The water bomber crews are in the St. John's Airport making plans for departure.
Are you ready to file, Rooster? Or what do you want to do? You want to file formation? Or
hey, that's not letting us go for formation. Fine.
Back in Yellowknife, with his tracking system up and running, Mikey is pulling an all-night shift, waiting for the water bombers to take off from St. John's.
Hello?
Hey, Ernie, it's Mikey.
Hey, Mikey.
Hey, what's the latest, man?
We're just fueling, getting ready to go. Pilot flight 5, we're out of here. Yeah, probably 4:30 is what we got the departure time, so...
Perfect.
It's too good to be true. Warm temperatures, clear skies, and an all-important tailwind.
Fueled everything up, got everything ready, ran the airplanes up.
Our weather briefing went good, and we're ready to go. We did a final weather check.
Then,
damn,
a sudden change in the forecast.
The weather in the Azores went for crap. We're completely fogged in.
It's going to be like that for a while, then, looks like. Breaks for us today. We're ready to rock and roll. And at the last minute, we had to cancel.
Well, it was perfect. Earlier.
Hey, Mikey.
What's going on?
The weather has just went for hell in the Azores for us. The best that we can see is 200 feet.
Oh, man, that sucks.
Now the forecast has changed totally, so... Here, let's talk to Justin for a minute.
Hey, Justin.
You know, you got to feel pretty good about taking $5 million worth of airplanes and 7 people's lives, you know, across the ocean. And with that forecast, it was tough to feel good about it.
Well, I guess we better see if we can get back to there. Get those airplanes back in and get back to the hotel. Better phone the hotel and tell them we still need our rooms, I guess.
Coming up, AJ's wedding on ice. And the Buffalo Gang show up in force.
I don't know what I was thinking.
The day has come for the Electra's fuel haul to Baker Lake.
We're in gassed and oiled. We just got to take the plugs out and get her closed up.
The pilots are looking forward to this flight.
It's been kind of nice to see this airplane operating. We never hauled a load of it.
Yeah, exactly.
See how fast she goes and how she handles.
We'll be on our way this afternoon as long as the Baker Lake weather holds up.
Engineer Chuck Adams has done his job. Just a quick tire check.
Oh, they're hanging in. Hanging in.
And he's gone.
Well, I'm not sticking around. Take care.
That's a good thing.
Today's also the day AJ is getting hitched at the ice castle, a structure made of just ice and snow. The gang from Buffalo makes a strong showing.
I've been asked to be the greeter, keep the ruffians out, you know what I mean? It is kind of just an open door place, and you let people in, so anybody that doesn't belong, they get told to get 86. How are you doing? You coming in for the wedding, folks?
Yes, we are, yeah.
Awesome. Just around here and hang a left, pretty please.
It was really nice to have so many people from Buffalo at the wedding. I invited the whole crew that was up here, and most of them showed up. You know, the people up here do feel like family to me.
Everyone's in formal wear, Buffalo style. Janelle Glenn stepping out in open-toe shoes.
I don't know what I was thinking.
But it's AJ's attire that's taking center stage.
We have a few catcalls and some whistles there from, you know, everybody at Buffalo for the wearing the tux. I don't know, I think that they're kind of a little bit shocked that, you know, I cleaned up so good. I remember the moment when Candace was walking down the aisle towards me as I was standing there. She had a big, huge, like, shawl that she was wearing. She looked amazing. She was smiling.
It was neat to walk in and see AJ there waiting for me to walk down the aisle.
Learn to respect your individual outlook. Share your thoughts, experiences, and dreams.
We started actually saying our lines there. I started getting a bit choked up. Hi, Anthony. Thank you. It was probably one of the happiest days of my life to be married to Candace.
Heartbreaking. The ceremony was great. A little chilly, but unique.
Thank you. Across the country in St. John's, Newfoundland, the weather is finally looking good for a flight over the North Atlantic.
Well, it's the first time that we've actually had a wind that was favorable to go.
But the crew's enthusiasm is dampened as tragedy strikes off the coast of Newfoundland. With 18 people aboard, a helicopter headed to an offshore oil platform has crashed.
The Sikorsky 92 helicopter dished into the water about approximately 30 nautical miles east of St. John's.
Only one survivor so far out of 18. The North Atlantic is nothing to play with, for sure.
Coast Guard ships and military aircraft have searched the crash site all day. So far, finding only one survivor.
Most of these people are from this area. It's a small area, so a lot of people would know those men that are on that helicopter.
We're doing basically the same thing, only going a longer distance. We're going 1,300 miles.
But time is running out.
That's because those mandatory offshore survival suits will only keep someone alive for 24 hours in the frigid North Atlantic.
It's all fun and games and good training in the pool there, but the reality of the whole thing is very tough to survive out there in that ocean.
Arnie and his crew will have strong tailwinds if they fly tonight. A good thing, unless they have to ditch.
No, they're going to have probably 25 or 30 foot waves tomorrow with that wind. We couldn't even possibly land. You know, we might survive the landing, but the airplane would sink almost immediately in those type of waves.
The weather's shit. The helicopter just crashed out there. It's not very good, so. But we're totally prepared.
The helicopter crash is a terrifying dose of reality.
A little bit sobering, yeah. Sends some chills down on your back, for sure.
At this moment, the trip to the Azores is still a go, despite the helicopter tragedy. Which means the engineers' lives could soon be in the hands of the four pilots.
We got the word, 2 o'clock this morning, we're going to head up to the airport and go.
The rough weather that's been making the rescue attempt so difficult is actually the window the Buffalo crew has been waiting for. There's an excellent tailwind.
Well, we're leaving on Friday the 13th.
13th, what else is there?
We have 13,000 pounds of fuel. We got to go 1,300 miles. And, yeah, that's pretty good. Pretty good odds.
Still to come, the pilots forge ahead with their plans to cross the North Atlantic.
The stars are aligning tonight. Boys are just pulling the airplanes out now.
Stop the work to go.
It's 2 a.m. and the westerly wind is howling at St. John's Airport in Newfoundland.
So we're going.
It's a good tailwind, exactly what they need for this flight to the Azores Islands.
Cut my hair and everything too, getting that survival suit.
I see that, yeah.
I was sitting I wanted a tight seal.
In a hurry to get their Martian suits on.
Might as well be comfortable while you die if I share.
It's off to work to go.
Pulling another all-nighter in Yellowknife, Mikey's watching the satellite feed on the monitor.
The moon. TXP fired up. Well, this is the first signs of life I've seen.
Weather conditions aren't perfect.
It's not the greatest right now, but it's improving.
We need the tailwind, so we got it tonight. That's good.
This is the farthest the crew has come so far. And unless a last-minute weather warning is issued, they will be airborne in a few minutes.
So it looks like to me they're actually in the aircraft doing a run-up. Both airplanes are lit. We got both planes fired up.
I just got a text message. Waiting for oceanic clearance before takeoff.
And they get it.
You are clear for takeoff.
Oh, here we go, boys. 2 knots.
Get excited.
TXP's heading down the runway. She's 11 knots. Here she is. FNF should follow right behind her.
Oh, TXP's taking off. Look.
Well, she's in the air now.
It's
go in to make sure both of them get up there. There she goes. Both of them are now in the air. We are in business.
It will take over 9 hours to reach the Azores Islands. But in less than 2 hours, they'll reach their point of no return. And then, there will be no turning back.
Your adventure has just begun.
On the next episode of Ice Pilots NWT, the Rampy conflict escalates.
Pretty unhappy with it all.
And the water bomber pilots face danger over the North Atlantic.
We got an overspeed.
Okay, Santa Maria, Santa Maria.
Confirm your intention.
We're declaring an emergency this time.